We're talking about how Eastern spiritual practices, like meditation and yoga, became mainstream in the U.S. And a big piece of that history happened in a particular place on California's Big Sur coastline, Esalen Institute. It was founded in the early 60s by two young visionaries, Michael Murphy and Richard Price. Under their direction, Esalen became a symbol of counterculture and the human potential movement, with its yoga and massage workshops, legions of psychedelic trippers, and those famous hot tubs where clothing is optional. For all of its New Age gloss, Esalen was actually founded as a place to explore the underlying philosophy of religious experience. And that's something Steve Paulson discovered during a recent visit there. He got up early one morning and he sat down to talk with Esalen founder Mike Murphy and Jeffrey Kripal, who's the author of A Definitive History of Esalen.
We are sitting right now on the edge of the ocean in beautiful Big Sur, looking out at the cliffs over the water, waves pounding in, sitting on a deck in Murphy House, named after one of my guests here.
Well, after my family.
Okay, after your family. So Michael Murphy, one of the founders of Esalen Institute. So Mike, take me back to the very beginning. What were you trying to do by creating Esalen?
Well, I'd had the dream for a few years. I had been inspired when I was an undergraduate at Stanford in 1950. I walked in by mistake to a class on comparative religions. Friedrich Spiegelberg, a great professor from Germany, very charismatic, and I heard that Atman was Brahman. That changed my life, and then I later, through that class, encountered an Indian philosopher, his thought, Sri Aurobindo, great Indian thinker, truly realized contemplative, and a foremost leader of the Indian independence movement. He was the first person to call for complete freedom from the British. This is before Gandhi. So I was inspired to a vision that I heard from him, that the whole cosmos is slumbering spirit, that the cosmos is essentially God waking up.
So going back to the very first year of Esalen, when it had become Esalen Institute, what year was that again?
1962.
So what did people do during that first year?
Well, it began with seminars, so we invited all our favorite authors to come. And so in the very early years, Arnold Toynbee, in 1962, he talked about the coming century. He thought it was the coming of Buddhism to the West. Abraham Maslow, the famous psychologist of self-actualization. He was very important to us. Aldous Huxley, who gave us a language to make what we were feeling more accessible to people, what he called the nonverbal humanities, which would include meditation, sensory awareness, all the yogas, and so forth.
I have to say, this is all very heady, considering I think the image that Esalen has out in the wider world, which is, has more to do with hot tubs, hippies, you name it, drugs, sex, not necessarily sort of this high intellectual discourse that you're talking about.
That's right. Well, the media caught up with us. It was not in 62. They caught up with us in 67. And by that time, we had been swept downstream in the heady days of the Summer of Love, and the hippies, who are marching by the thousands down the Big Sur coast with campfires and psychedelics. And we here, there was a lot of discussion of and experiments with psychedelic drugs. And yes, we have these hot springs here. My grandfather was a doctor. He bought this property in 1910 as a spa. So yes, there were hot baths. There was a lot of LSD. But at the core of it, the reason for it, then and now, had to do with the mind as well as the body. So it was body, mind, heart, and soul from the very beginning. So Jeff here.
Let me bring in Jeff, actually. So Jeff, you are a professor of comparative religion. You have written The Definitive History of Esalen. Where do you think Esalen fits into, let's say, the history of modern spirituality?
I think it's at a kind of origin point for a lot of things that people see. I mean, a lot of the things that Esalen stood for in the early 60s, like yoga, meditation, the discussion between science and spirituality, being spiritual but not religious. Those were all the banners that were flying here in the early 60s, but they were flying virtually nowhere else. And now, of course, they're flying everywhere. So I think a lot of things people assume about alternative religious streams in America actually maybe not began here, but they were catalyzed and supercharged here in the 60s and 70s.
In the subtitle of your book, you talk about the religion of no religion. What does that mean?
Well, that was Frederick's phrase.
Frederick
Spiegelberg. Never knew the man, but he was a fellow professor of comparative religion. He did what I do, and that was his phrase. He was a reader of Heidegger and German philosophy and Latin mystical theology, and so he's a very smart guy. But the phrase was based on a mystical experience he had in 1917. And basically what happened was he was just walking through a wheat field and the entire universe manifested as a living thing to him. He had an experience of cosmic mind. And it just blew his mind, as we say. And as he was walking, kind of swimming in this cosmic mind, he came upon a little church. And he heard this music inside it. And he just was appalled because he didn't understand how that little building and that little tradition could encompass this cosmic being he had just known in the entire physical universe. And so he developed this notion of the religion of no religion was a way of affirming the religious traditions, but none of them can be ultimately true. And so it was this paradoxical affirmation and denial of religion at the same time for him.
So Mike, let me turn to you then. Do you feel like what happens at Esalen is based on any particular spiritual religion, or is it a bit of a grab bag?
Well, what drives me, and I think ultimately drives the spirit of this place, is explicitly the religion of no religion. In other words, it's a turn away from something and towards something.
Turning away from organized institutional religion.
Yes, whatever it is. Now, most of the people come here, their roots are either Jewish or Christian. So, okay, wherever you're turning away from, you're turning toward this being that Frederick Spiegelberg, my teacher, felt. That spirit, that immanence of the divine in everything, but away from. For example, in the early years here, it was impossible for us to keep a crucifix on this property. I mean, they would disappear.
As if people were offended by
the criticism? Yes, they were offended. Now, they would leave the Buddhas here. So in other words, there was a revolutionary impulse here, whether we liked it or not. It was, wow, okay, you asked for it. Say, here you're getting it. In the beginning, you could say it was a subculture. Ted Rozak called it a counterculture. But then, pretty soon, it was, a lot of the people here are actually Republicans. There are a lot of atheists who turn out to be crypto-mystics. Some of the leaders here, Fritz Perls and others, were dedicated atheists. But in their private moments, they talked as if with tongues in a learned language of mysticism. And that's really been driving this for 52 years. Now, there's hundreds of particulars about all of this.
Sure.
And because it leads, just to make a long leap, it led us straight over to Russia right away. And so we got very involved in Russian-American relations. So it's a long leap from Indian philosophy and Atman Brahman to Russian-American relations. But for us, it's been of a piece. Once you start on this path, these things are connected.
Yeah. Let me turn to our scholar of comparative religion here. Mike was just talking about how atheists come here and then have mystical experiences. What do you make of that?
You don't need God to have a mystical experience. And of course, a lot of mystical traditions are deeply critical of images of God as some kind of separate being out there, like another person. So to me, it's not incompatible at all.
And what about the criticism that I guess is leveled against a lot of what's passed off as New Age spirituality, cafeteria spirituality? Just have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Doesn't go very deep. It's people who dabble. Is it fair to tar Esalen with that charge?
I think that comes from a conservative place. It comes from a place that wants to preserve the traditions as sort of silos, self-preserved silos that have nothing to do with one another. And I think what Esalen has done, which frankly wasn't new in the culture, the transcendentalists were doing this already in the middle of the 19th century. Once you locate religious authority in the human person, once you identify an immanent God, there's nothing to stop the individual from picking and choosing whatever he or she wants. Because then the authority doesn't lie out in this tradition or that scripture or that priest or that authority. It lies inside. And I think when people resist that, they're correctly seeing how radical it is.
So you regard, I mean, as a historian of religion and specifically a historian of Esalen, you see this place and all that it's done over the last 50 years as having an important impact on, what, American culture?
Yeah, I think important's an understatement. I mean, I think it's had an immense influence, largely indirect, largely invisible. I mean, it was a very visible influence in the 60s and the early 70s, but since then, I think it's primarily been indirect. Tens of thousands of people are coming here and being influenced in some subtle way, meeting someone, meeting an idea, a book, and then going out and doing things in the world.
Now, we've been talking about all of this kind of at a pretty heady level, and I think we got to get some stories here. And I know there are 52 years worth of stories, but if you could just mention maybe one or two anecdotes that to you express the spirit of Esalen, what you do that's kind of distinctive that puts it on the map. What comes to mind?
Well, maybe this is a too gaudy a headline, but we've had KGB and CIA guys here discussing Russian-American relations and then go to the hot baths together and then suddenly seeing the depth of common ground, common humanity. It struck home to me once when one of these CIA guys took me out on the porch and he says to me, Mike, come here, this is urgent. And I could tell he was beside himself, he was trembling. He said, see that guy over there? One of these KGB guys. I said, yeah. He said, let me just say something. He's an actual human. So I said, oh, absolutely, he said, no, you don't understand me. He's an actual human. Now I could see he was beside himself. For him, it was a tumbling down of a lot of preconceptions. I'll never forget that, and I wrote a little essay on this, Russian-American Friendship as an Altered State of Consciousness, because then he has to decide who he is in his life work. If he goes home and they hear about this, they'll say, oh, he's been turned. Esalen's turned him, you know, in the KGB sense. So that breakout then leads to enormous political thing in that case, because we're not communists. We were just for getting to know each other and peace, not war. So that kind of revolutionary flip happened a lot in the 60s.
Michael Murphy and Jeffrey Kripal talking with Steve Paulson at Esalen Institute. Murphy's the co-founder of Esalen, and Kripal is a scholar of comparative religion at Rice University. He's the author of Esalen, America and the Religion of No Religion. And if you want to hear more, you'll find Steve's complete interview on our website at ttbook.org.